Welcome to The Elephant in New York, presented by the Fearless People Experience. Do you know those things in the workplace that make work suck, but remain unchanged? Well, those are the elephants we're here to talk about. We believe that these topics can and should be addressed with common sense, courage, and compassion. We may not have all the answers, and we're definitely not always going to be right, but we're here to build a better people experience. You gotta start somewhere. Let's go.
Hi, and welcome back to The Elephant in the Org. My name is Marian Anderson, and as always, joined in this episode with my co-hosts, Danny Clutch and Kasia Dora. This week's episode, titled With Higher Today, Gone Tomorrow, Navigating the Disposable Work Era, came on the back of us reading a Forbes article by Anna Cowell-Smith, titled Three Reasons Why This Season's Layoffs May Destroy the Future of Work. It definitely got under our skin. It's a great article, but the concept that layoff is becoming a bit of a culture as opposed to something that we really don't want to see definitely got to us and so inspired this week's episode. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to The Elephant in the Org, everyone. I'm Danny Glutch. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kasia Dora.
Hello.
And Marian Anderson.
Good morning.
And today's special elephant is the layoff culture. And it's sad that it's like it's an actual cultural thing. It's like, oh, what about our like pizza party culture or our golfing culture? No, nothing fun. Layoffs. There's an article about layoff culture is here to stay. And then there was another article about layoff culture being what's the title? This season of layoffs may destroy the future of work. That's optimistic.
That's cheerful.
Yeah.
Forbes coming in with the big punches.
I feel like we just need to talk about that. Like, is the future of work destroyed and is layoff culture here to stay?
Probably. Well, everything is, it's like fashion, right? Everything comes in cycles. You know, for a lot of the time, we look at double denim and we think, good grief, what were you thinking? But weirdly enough, I'm seeing this season double denim coming back in. So it could be a faux pas one year and, you know, de rigueur the next. This scares me in a way because it completely erodes, well, everything, but psychological safety, trust, all of that. I mean, that just goes without saying. But there's a bit of me that's like, what if though? What if this leads to some form of positive transformation? Hear me out. And I'm still probably thinking this through my head myself. But we've been listening to financial experts tell us for the last however many years that diversifying your portfolio is important or having secondary income is important, right? And so I wonder if the model of fractional actually could almost help people have more consistency over their jobs, basically, in terms of if the layoff culture does become more of a universal thing, which is abhorrent, but if it does the, you know, having fractional mean that you're not having all your eggs in one basket, so to speak? Do you know what I mean?
I think it kind of depends on like where you are in your career though.
Of course.
Right. Like if you're young and you're either just out of college or maybe you're in the workforce before entering college, and there are layoffs, well, now you're just rebuilding your life over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And that can also be a cycle, right? Because unfortunately, employers have bias when they see lots of job movement. They have bias when they see maybe like four career moves on someone's resume. Unfortunately, right, we know bias does exist, but I also completely agree with you, Marian, that this trend, right, we all talk about how humans are people, not resources, and this layoff culture is really using that phrase human capital in an ugly way.
Absolutely.
Because in order to keep stocks up and help shareholders, companies are affecting thousands of people. What was it like last year? I don't remember the exact number, but I feel like it was like just in the tech industry alone, there were over 200,000 layoffs or something like people laid off.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people to go into fractional. So I think it'll help for some, but I don't. You know, I think companies need to treat people like people a bit more.
100%.
Because it used to be a black mark, right? On a CEO's record. I remember like being in school and learning about business and like what the concept of layoffs was. And it was like, oh, the cases in our textbooks at the time were CEOs got voted off by the board if they had a layoff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a PR disaster. And I mean, it still is, but I don't want to turn this into a political conversation because this isn't definitely not what we're about. But I keep hearing that unemployment is the lowest it's been in a long time. I watched some news coverage yesterday. You know, it's under 4%. I'm scratching my head at that because so many layoffs, low unemployment. Where are they all going?
Marian, this brings you back to the fractional stuff. It's you're not unemployed if you're working Lyft or Uber Eats part-time.
Yeah, it's true.
To fill in the gaps. And
it's true.
I was already not making enough money in my 9-to-5 job because cost of living is what it is. So yeah. I was, you know, I literally was, you know, teaching at a university full-time, running a program. And working Lyft on the weekends, like 20 hours, because I needed to make money.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone kind of jokes like, oh, is Lyft all you do when they get in or do you do something else? Yeah, I teach at the university. Yeah. Like, and so if I were to get laid off, it's, oh, no, I'm not unemployed. I'm this other thing. And it's almost like these experts that you mentioned before who are talking about diversifying your portfolio as far as an income earner to be more resilient, yada, yada, like have all these fractional things lined up, be your own marketing team, be your own biz dev team, like all these other things other than just doing a job and making that be enough to like afford a house and college for your kids and all that stuff and vacations and a boat. Do you know people used to buy boats? Anyways, like it's almost like those experts are kind of in it to look at certain numbers like, oh, hey, unemployment's down. Economy's good. Things are good. And it's not. We're all here scrapping and rent is 50% of our income on a good day. And now we also need a side hustle and our hobbies now need to be like something that we can make money on Twitch or on YouTube or sell it on Etsy. We can't just like work 9-to-5. By the way, it used to be like 9-to-5, not 8-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just, all of this is just, we're getting squeezed more and more. And I think this is such a great example of that unemployment being low. And we all know it's not.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing with unemployment being low is I don't remember when it happens, but at some point they phase people out of the statistic. So like the system itself is gamed,
because
right?
Unemployed is when you're still actively looking.
Yeah. Well, it's like, there's an actively looking and there's another thing. And I can't remember if it's like what, like 6 to 8 months or something. And you know, just from seeing everyone's posts on LinkedIn that people have been unemployed for at some points, like over a year trying to find new work, right? Like,
oh, absolutely. I suppose.
But I don't remember. I don't remember when they're, you know, well, I'm going to call data gaming.
I'm assuming the data that they're referring to are those drawing unemployment. So I suppose when that runs out until the next cycle, because I think it comes back, if I understand correctly, when you start your next year or whatever. But maybe it's that. I don't know. If anyone's listening to this and knows the answer, please tell us and let us know.
Please educate us. We're open for education.
Yes. Elephant at thefearlesspx.com for all of our labor lawyers.
Yeah. But I am scratching my head because all of these layoffs, you just have to open up LinkedIn and it's a sea of green banners open to work. And I read a post the other day that someone was reaching out to the network for the third time in 2 years. that they've been laid off.
Oh,
yep. Yeah, I think I saw that same post.
Yeah.
Or it would be even worse if it was a different post.
It's probably, maybe, who knows?
It might be. It very well might be. But I mean, I think, God, just thinking about how people's emotional and psychological states are, and you mentioned psychological safety and trust at the very beginning of this. One of the things Forbes also calls out is how it disenfranchises those who stay, right? Oh, yeah. Like the amount of guilt and shame, that it's like a survivor's guilt,
yeah,
right? Especially when some of these layoffs have no real rhyme or reason, and you have teams just split in half.
Mm.
And everyone's kind of looking at each other now, that lack of trust happening, like, am I next? When's the next one? You've done it once, so it's going to happen again.
It's true. I mean, you know, it should not be a tool in your toolbox that you're pulling out, you know, willy-nilly, right? And it should be an absolute last resort, which historically is what it was, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, we're treating people like cattle, and we're seeing them as disposable is absolutely abhorrent. When did we stop giving a shit about people?
Well, this is a really interesting bit of history I learned reading some Simon Sinek and some other sort of business leadership books. There was a philosophical economic change in the late 70s, early 80s, right? Mm. The rise of trickle-down economics, mm-hmm. the weakening of labor unions, all of that. Coincided with the idea of, right, remember the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker version of economics, mm-hmm. of like, hey, the community needs a service, I make a good or a service, we meet, and if they're willing to pay a certain amount, I make a certain amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
It shifted from that sort of meeting a market need to the purpose of the business is to make the owner and shareholders money.
Mm.
Mm.
And it's no longer about serving a community need. It's about how do we maximize this money? And you started to see a lot of product quality get really, really low. And it's all like, wait, we don't care about making it well. We just want to make it for as cheaply as possible.
Yeah.
Right. So that happened a lot in the late 70s, early 80s. And mm-hmm. Detroit is still trying to recover from this because one of the biggest cost centers in giant air quotes, because you can't make cars without labor.
And,
I mean, it's closer now than it ever was with robots, but the big cost center that got cut to make cars cheaper and increase profit margins was massive layoffs of the labor force. Let's just move it to Mexico. Oh, well, let's do it again. Let's move it over to the next cheapest place and the next cheapest place, right? That outsourcing of labor. That happened, that wasn't really a thing, aside from like those last like ditch efforts just to save an entire company that you were mentioning earlier, that was like, again, post-industrial revolution. No one got laid off when we were all working on farms, right? You either died of famine or you had a job.
Yeah.
And it's so post-industrial revolution when it was like, oh my goodness, like we're really struggling. We have to do layoffs. Otherwise, just like we don't exist. Changed in, you know, what, 50 years ago, that's not that long ago, to we need to do layoffs. And not even we need to, we can do layoffs as a way to maximize profits. That's a big change.
Yeah.
Super short-sighted too, by the way, that it did really not end up well for the automakers.
Well, no. And actually, there's just a little paragraph here I'd love to read and kind of dissect that with you, because it follows on from that. The existential and reputational risk of headcount churn is immeasurable, literally and figuratively. Following a layoff, 70% of companies struggle with talent acquisition. After all, how many people will risk working for a company that repeatedly lays off large swaths of its workforce? And counting on the remaining employees to help is a lost cause. 77% of surviving employees lose faith in the company and stop being champions. Mm-hmm. At a time when hiring is harder than ever, parenthesis, there are 12.1 million open jobs in the US right now, and the future of work is still undefined. Today's layoff epidemic is sabotaging tomorrow's performance.
Oh, I like that. So, well, I don't like that, but I like the phrase sabotaging the performance, because, you know, we talk heavily about psychological safety, and psychological safety directly impacts a culture and individuals' innovative work behavior.
Yeah.
That they go through in their job on a daily basis, right?
That's like, going to be its own episode.
Innovative work behavior is a great, great conversation, but not today's. But the aspect of it, right? Like, if your job is problem solving effectively for whatever it is that you're doing, you need a certain amount of mental headroom to think that way.
Yes.
You need stability.
And
this is, I loved the phrasing, because it's such a reminder that these are short-term gains that are unrelated to like company productivity. This is all about like stock buyback, shareholder value. It has nothing to do with the quality of the product. And again, this, it goes back to a lot of companies would rather see their stock prices increase than people buying their product or service. Because to them, that brings them more value, because it brings them more capital. But it has nothing to do with what the company's actually doing, why it exists.
Yeah.
And when you cut off like the goal of a company from why it exists and what it like produces and the goods or services, like, you've kind of lost the plot. And that's what, like Tesla, they're the most valuable auto manufacturer in the history of the world. They don't make that many cars, and their profits are not insanely huge. It's because their stock price, right? It's the cost of entry to be a stock owner of Tesla is really, really high, because a lot of people want to do it. And like, that's great. And it gives them a lot of financial ability to do stuff and make cars, but it doesn't make their cars any better. It doesn't make their cars have more profit margins.
I think the EV market is an interesting one. I was listening to a podcast the other day with Kara Swisher, and they were talking exactly about Tesla, but also Elon Musk generally. She's not the biggest fan of Elon Musk, which is fun to me. But ultimately, with him being officially the richest man in the world, or the second richest man in the world, a lot of that equity is in him, right? And a lot of that it's not from Tesla, because as you say, the margins are actually pretty slim, but it's from the other
valuation
stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's from the other stuff that he does, like Starlink, right? Which is heavily contracted by governments for communications and SpaceX and all of that stuff. So that's really where the money comes from.
Going back to your diversification conversation.
Exactly. Right.
But we're not billionaires. And like, this is one of the things that I, you know, as we start to wrap up a little bit, is like, what happened to the days when like one person in the household could work 9 to 5 and we be stable, and they didn't have to worry about whether or not they were being laid off? They were just a school teacher, and it was like, that's enough. Like, we've gotten so far from that to now even like dual income households are terrified of their bills.
Yeah. Or their groceries. Like,
yeah,
it's the overall cost of living increase, right?
If they do get laid off, they're hooped, to borrow my friend Joel's, right? They're done. They're forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that you're right though, Danny, in that, you know, and I think our workforce right now is feeling that sentiment really heavily, because we have a big change happening in our workforce. What it's like, thousands of people within the baby boomer generation are leaving the workforce on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, something like that. And so there's more Gen Xers. We've got more millennials and more Gen Zers who are working in this workforce, who have seen that example and are asking why it's gone. They're asking why they can't do that. And it is causing that disenfranchisement. It's causing that lack of trust. It's causing a lot of those things, because they were like, well, you were able to buy a house and have it only take like 25% of your life income out of the equation. I can't even afford groceries because they used to be $75 and now it's 150.
Yeah.
And I think that the combination and the timing, right? Like when you think about all of this happening in a really short time frame, right? The pandemic started in 2020. We started to see the rise of the cost of living start to grow at the same time. We saw these layoffs starting to happen because during this time period, companies were experiencing massive profits. Mm. And with those massive profits came layoffs. Mm-hmm. And so I find it, and now we have this feeling.
That's a logical, natural conclusion. Massive profits come layoffs.
It seems to be now.
I'm dead inside.
But it's just weird. Like all of this has happened in like this little bubble of time, a really small bubble of time. When you think about when and how long it takes economic change to actually happen. And
yeah, you know, this weird microcosm of the last 3 years is such an anomaly, right? Because the pandemic and then everything that was in e-commerce or adjacent just exploded during mm-hmm. that time. And then we all know the overhire nonsense that most people fell into and then quickly realized, oh shit, which drove up unnaturally the cost of talent. And now what we're seeing is that, again, in those sectors, in those, you know, tech and knowledge sectors, where they're having to downsize because they overhired and because they paid these out of market salaries, now that's screwed everything because then these are the people that are let go. And then when roles do open again, there's such an imbalance in salaries with those that are still there versus those coming in. And it's a fucking mess, quite mm-hmm. frankly.
Yeah. Well, to go back to something you said, I think both of you mentioned sort of gaming. Right. It's a system and it's a game and people are just kind of playing it. And it's the easy solution to be like, oh, you know what? Here, layoffs. Let's just cut off a bunch of people. Right. They're seeing their employees as just resources, like mm-hmm. a cost center.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons, and I've been saying this for like over a decade, one of the reasons why I like labor unions is that they can change those rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
To where they say, you know what, you can't just go to your easiest solution. You need to earn your paycheck, C-suite people. You need to earn that paycheck a little bit. Leverage those MBAs, leverage all that experience and all that money that you get paid to find a solution that isn't just, let's just lay off 10% of our whatever workforce. Like, the rules, make it so that they have to do something a little bit more creative.
Yeah. I mean, big up, you know, the auto workers union and what they achieved last year. Absolutely phenomenal. And
that's after decades of the degradation of so many labor unions.
100%.
Honestly, mm-hmm. as we transition towards, like, is this a cultural thing? Is there a large impact to the future of work? Like, I think this is going to continue until there's, like, a massive push for like general strike, labor union improvement.
This is the rebirth. This is the rebirth of the labor unions, right? And as a human being, I don't think it's a bad thing. As an HR leader, it puts the fear of God into me, but that's a whole separate issue. but as a human being, I applaud it. And I think that there does need to be more advocacy and there does need to be a stronger representation for those who are effectively, you know, unsupported. I mean, there was a massive coverage last year about Starbucks, I think, wanted to mm-hmm. unionize. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's still happening in the news. Yep. Like they're still talking about it. And you've had Apple stores unionize mm-hmm. in the last few years as well. Like that's a retail mm-hmm. store.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, big tech, but retail.
Yeah, exactly. And let's face it, right? Apple store employees have it much better than most retail employees, right? And so the fact that they're unionizing says a lot. I think that, and again, this is not fully my area of expertise because I've not worked in industries necessarily where unionization is a big thing. So it's not something I'm really an expert about. But as a human being, I applaud it. And I think the rebirth of a modern unionization sort of system, I think can only be a good thing.
Yeah, it's, there are certain parts of that psychological safety, of the stability and the reliability, consistency of how employees are treated, that really is like even more fundamental than like, can I be a dissenter and still have a voice and not get repercussions? The like, do I have a job tomorrow even if I don't say anything?
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like that, like when we're talking about sort of like the pyramid of needs, like the psychological safety bit is so important, but like you can't speak up and get to that part of safety if you don't even know if you're going to be there next week.
Yeah.
And we need to work on that first.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really important thing. And I think what also makes this whole moment in time interesting, Danny, is that moment, right? That like, I'm not sure if I'm going to have a job. I have seen so many TikToks of people sitting in their cars before they go into work in the morning. And they're like, I don't know if I'm going to have a job. And the amount of people who empathize, who have experienced this or just care about this person that they've never met before, who shows up on their FYP, because it's such a relatable feeling to thousands of people. And then you've got people who obviously virally even have recorded themselves in the process of getting laid off, having conversations on if it is or is not performance related. It's just a failure of the business. But that fear of, am I employed, is something that people are sharing. And I do applaud that because it's working to slowly chip away and eradicate the shame that comes from the process of getting laid off in the first place. Yeah. But that fear is so, I think that's what they start with. They start with the fear and they don't even realize that in sharing it, that they actually can kind of help themselves a little bit, at least emotionally, psychologically, mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. But the fact that we're having to do that is awful. And, you know, something that I just kind of want to circle back to, just going back to talking about unions very quickly. The fact, when I listen to myself saying, I think it's a good thing, I want to clarify something. The fact that we even have to have them is outrageous. We shouldn't have to have employee advocacy like that, right? We shouldn't, because we should have employers that have integrity and that are human-centric and understand the importance of psychological safety. And so ultimately, again, it's like the elephant, right, in the org. If psychological safety existed, there would be no elephant. If psychological safety existed, there would be no need for unions, shop stewards, all the rest of it, right? So it really is a solution to something which, if it was solved at its core, wouldn't even need to be. But yeah, that's a utopia. That's
a really good point, Mary. It is not the solution. It is the tourniquet to the real problem. And the real problem is that business owners don't treat their labor properly. They don't view their labor as essential.
Yeah.
And it's only gotten worse.
Yeah. And not all, right? I mean, obviously, sometimes you can be the best employer in the world, but at the end of the day, if the economy takes a turn that you can't, you know, work around, you are going to be in situations. There's no perfect.
I still would love for people to be more creative. There are stories during the pandemic and during the 2008 recession of very few companies who were really, really creative dealing with extraordinary problems. And maybe it was the economy, or maybe it was a shift in technology, right? Of like, oh, hey, we used to make flip phones. Oh no, flip phones don't exist anymore, right? There's a good way and a bad way to handle that as a business leader. And too often they just hit the big red layoff button.
You're not wrong. But I think we're naive to say that all of those solutions, all of those situations can be avoided. That's not real life, right?
No, absolutely not. I would love for, you know, for
the rapidity of it to not be so rapid.
100%. Yeah, for not to be a cultural thing of just like, layoffs.
You just, It's one of those things, right? I mean, like, we just going back to the LinkedIn aspect, how many times do you open your LinkedIn feed and it starts with, I didn't want to have to say this.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have to share.
Yeah, exactly. Well, going back to the accountability of the C-suite, the one thing that I would like to see more of is when, you know, if you think of things like if there's an airplane incident, right? Like a crash or a near miss or something like that, right?
Or a door opening in flight.
Yeah, bolts falling out, whatever it is. There's a full investigation. There's an investigation done, like use the plane, by the manufacturer, by the airline, by the airport, and by
a regulatory government.
Yeah, the FAA.
FAA, or in mm-hmm. Europe, it's something different, right? But there should be a post-mortem done to understand the points of failures and the things that should be, you know, that would be learned for the next time and put into practice, right?
Yeah, no,
normal practice in medical and airlines and all sorts of industries, right? Yeah. Why the fuck are we not doing it?
I've never even heard of that idea, Marion. And
it does happen. I mean, I do them, right?
I think the inclusion, I think there should be a regulatory governance that comes in and does like, hey, what happened here? We get your guys's what thoughts post-mortem of what happened. Here's our assessment.
Well, that happens if you're a public company and that happens if you're like, you know, connected to the government and things like that, right? Where there's more regulatory standards.
But it's not a standard across the, right? Yeah.
No, if you take it to a different extreme, to like a small private company, of course it doesn't happen. You know, if you've got a board, yes, hopefully they're doing it and holding you accountable. But if you're a bootstrapped, no board, no, you know, other investors, whatever, then, you know, you're running your own ship and ultimately no one's questioning you. So I don't know. I think that we need to have more things in place to hold accountability better.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that would help address some of this layoffs as a culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the concept of accountability is, you know, almost a root of this entire conversation, right? Because we're calling out the fact that a layoff culture shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, I'm going to go apply for more jobs.
Oh, Danny.
If you have a job for Danny, you can email us at elephant@thefearlesspx.com.
He's really good, by the way, so you should hire him.
I'm a joy to work with.
He is. He's a lot of fun.
2/3 of this podcast. Thumbs up, Danny.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. You can email us at that email I said. Please be sure to like, subscribe, give a follow, give a 5-star review. That would really help us show up in all of the podcast algorithms. We'll see you next time. Thank you, everyone.